Hello, hello. It's Jacob Hill with GRC Academy. Today, I'm here with Mr. Daniel Stark. Daniel, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Jacob?
Doing very well. Thank you so much for coming on. And folks, if you're enjoying the podcast, please take a moment to like, comment, share, subscribe, review, all the things. Really helps me out. Thanks in advance. So Daniel, tell us about your background and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, so I come from an entrepreneurial family, specifically manufacturing. I grew up in a machine shop that was started in our family's two-car garage. From there, we grew that business into a multi-million dollar business with just under 80 employees by the time we sold that back in 2018. We went from working on farmers' equipment and rebuilding and repairing something on their tractor all the way to doing high-end manufacturing, both commercial and military, tight tolerance, five-axis machining, wire EDM, high-temperature alloys, doing stuff for GE Aviation, doing stuff for their early engine programs. We were instrumental in the first Gen X engines, Leap X, 9X. We were involved with the original F-35 GE engine. We have done stuff for NASA, all branches of the U.S. Armed Forces. We were very much a typical manufacturing job shop.
That's awesome. I'm excited about this episode because I don't have a lot of experience, hardly any really, with manufacturers and manufacturing. Hearing that story, just that whole American dream type story, building something from nothing, that's a great story. What do you do today?
Today, I am mainly focused on the CMMC area. I am a CMMC assessor with the Cyber AB. I'm working with Meerkat Cyber. We're a candidate C3PAO, currently doing DAP assessments and helping with implementations of DIP businesses today. We hope to be in the next couple months a full-fledged C3PAO, also involved with other business ventures. But CMMC is where it's at right now. It's close to our heart. Growing up in the machine shop, I see a lot of what the DIB struggles with today. I know from our standpoint of where our business was and what my role in doing IT for that business. Hey, you like computers, do this. And suddenly you're trying to put together a network and run your IT infrastructure. And what's FIPS? I've never heard of FIPS.
Right, exactly. And you alluded to that story. Tell us how you actually got into the IT space working it with your family business.
There was a great need being in the higher end manufacturing area. We had a lot of CAD/CAM and needs. Where I came in initially was building the PC that would be used by the programmer to make the programs that program these expensive pieces of equipment that make all these chips. From there, it was learning about how operating systems and networks work and eventually taking over the entire role of IT. When you're a business owner and you're in the family business, you've got to wear all hats. So you're involved with not only the IT infrastructure, but you're in the operations, quality, something that is very important and has a lot of parallels in CMMC. There's a lot of crossover there. There's a lot of things that people that have spent their entire life inspecting components and dealing with quality management systems are going to go, I recognize what you're talking about. I may not understand what you're trying to assess. I don't understand the IT terminology, but I understand what you're trying to do.
Talk to us about what a typical manufacturing shop, what does it look like? What does it smell like?
And you're like also. So your typical American machine shop that's been built by the guy who's like, hey, I'm going to go start my own machine shop and build his business over years and years. It's going to be anywhere from a small tool barn to a massive hangar complex. You're going to smell it. You're going to walk in the door and you're going to smell that coolant. And it's not necessarily rancid. It's just the chemicals involved with keeping your cutting tools cool. Just they don't smell pleasant. There's also going to be a lot of noise. Your spindles, if they're not moving, you're not making money. So you've got a lot of high-pitched noises. You're going to have a lot of people wearing hearing protection, all sorts of other PPE sort of things. You're going to have a lot of older individuals. The average age of the machinist is going up every year. There's not enough people getting into the industry. Part of it is the stigma of I'm getting dirty and all that. In a high-end manufacturing, you really don't. But it's hard to get that through, especially to somebody who's in high school and is like, hey, everybody says go to college. And that's not for everybody. And to your point of what does it look like, I do want to say a lot of these guys are so set in their ways that they don't want to change them. They've been doing it for 30 years, 40 years. And that is a mentality that we as IT professionals have to try to bring them onto our side.
Does a typical manufacturing shop, do they have IT staff?
It really depends on the spectrum. Some will hire MSPs that handle pretty much everything. They may have somebody who can go plug something into their firewall. But some, they're just like, hey, Joe, you really like computers. You play video games of an evening. Hey, can you fix this? A fair amount of machine shops that I'm aware of, they still do not have really an IT person. And at most, it's somebody who's gotten the school's hard knocks training. IT is not viewed upon as a budget priority. They might be running with the RISP firewalls, for all we know, which isn't even really a firewall.
Now, in the context of NIST 800-171, as we all know, it's all about the CUI, the controlled and classified information. Let's talk about CUI in the context of manufacturing and how the data flows from the system to the floor and all of that.
Let's start off from where we receive it. You might be getting it from a contracting officer. Hopefully, knock on wood, the contracting officer is using DoD Safe and sending the files that way. We know for a fact that it's still not happening. It's probably coming in via an email. You're getting a print and along with an RFP, and you might be getting it from another prime. And they're saying, hey, we need you to provide this operation. So your person who does the quotes, that might be one of the programmers. It might be the business owner. They're going to take that print. They're going to load it into hopefully a SharePoint or server share somewhere that more than likely is not protected adequately without user controls and stuff. They're going to review it. They're going to send that quote back off. They receive the quote. They're going to send it to their CNC programmer. It might just be email, plain text again. The programmer is going to take that print and or model. They're going to enter it into their CAD/CAM, develop the G code or whatever files. Some systems are a little bit different, but most things are run on G code today.
What is a CNC programmer for the folks who don't know, like me?
Okay. So a CNC programmer typically is a very experienced machinist already. Somebody who's spent a few years on the floor understanding how cutting tools work, how materials react to different operations and such. And they'll take a 3D model or a 2D print and they'll put that into their CAD/CAM because you start with most things, either bar stock, plate stock, just big pieces of material that you've got to put onto the CNC. Most machinists, they don't make parts, they make chips. And so that's what the CNC programmer is doing, is they're creating the code. If you're familiar with like 3D printing, it's the inverse of what a 3D printer is doing, of removing all that raw material until you have that final product. So you might be able to do all the machining in one operation. Some work requires more machining operations than you could imagine. It really comes down to the complexity and equipment available. They are very hard to find. You get find a good CNC programmer and you don't want to let them go. Typically, the programmers, let's say 15, 20 years worth of experience machinists.
They are taking a drawing that they're receiving that is labeled CUI. Are they converting it to the language of the CNC machine that will then do all the cutting of that physical object?
Kind of. What is the best thing to receive is a 3D model. You've got a 3D model and that is the final dimensions and everything, that makes it much easier because they can load that directly into their CAD/CAM. If not, what they'll do is they'll take that 2D model and literally convert that to a 3D model. They'll go in and into the modeling software, build out that object in there, and then they'll take in their CAD/CAM software and go, okay, I'm going to be starting out with, say, a 2-inch diameter piece of Inconel. And I'm going to have an operation come in, do a rough pass, bring it close to shape, and then come in with other tools, come in and do finishing operations, and from there. And that G code will be developed to go through a post processor, like how your interpreter, if you're writing machine code, if you're writing things in C and to write an application, in the same way, the CNC programmer is doing that with G code. It gives the machine on what speed to move a tool at, where to move it, position X, Y, and Z, whether it's 5-axis or not. And it gets more complicated from there.
Okay, that makes sense. That helps a lot. The data comes to us and hopefully DoD safe, whatever secure mechanism is used. And then the folks take that drawing and pull it onto their system they use to create the model and in some cases or whatever. Then it gets over to the machine that does all of the hardware. And how do they transfer that over to the machine?
So it depends on the machine shop. A lot of places are still transferring things via USB flash drive. That wonderful removable media for 171, that is a major hurdle for machine shops. It's okay, how do I handle removable media on my shop floor? Because you cannot encrypt that flash drive.
Yeah,
it needs to be in plain text. The machine controls do not understand. They won't be able to decrypt an encrypted file. So you've got several aspects there. In a more modern machine shop, they will have an operation technology network where they can load those to a dedicated server where the machinist at the control can go grab that G-code program and load it into the control. Then there's also machines that are older and they use serial. Actually, even new pieces of equipment still ship with serial connections today, and many people prefer to use serial over Ethernet. There are a lot of difficulties there, especially from a 171 standpoint. And talking about removable media, they may still be using floppy disks. A lot of old equipment, not as old as you think. We had pieces of equipment made in like 2008 that still ship with floppy drives. We actually retrofitted them. You can go on eBay today and find USB floppy emulators, and you literally format a 1.4 megabyte partition on a USB drive and you plug it into that. And that's how you program your machine.
And I imagine these CNC machines are not cheap, right?
No. And even if you could retrofit them, the controls are so out of date. You can buy new pieces of equipment with Windows 2000 on them. When I'm working a machine shop today is, okay, how do we segregate your equipment? Because the best thing to do from a compliance standpoint is if we can remove the removable media, let's do it. If you've got the budget for it, let's get the machines on an operational technology network, but not be able to ever touch the internet because those things are just a problem waiting to happen.
Now, also the environmentals here are very interesting as well, and no doubt present their own challenges because I imagine that some shops have a lot of heat, so they'll have bay doors open and all those things. Can you talk to us about the physical security type issues there?
So a lot of machine shops, even today, don't have badging systems for their door locks, for example. So it comes down to what sort of budget does the business owner have to do that. In a logging scenario, doing that would be best. But to your point, environmentals, I've talked to business owners who are like, I have a facility that even in the middle of winter, I cannot keep cool enough. My equipment puts off so much heat, I have to leave my doors open. How do I work with this? I'm like, okay, you just have to control the environment. You got to control your ingress and egress. And that means you could put a chain link fence across your door and do that. You're still controlling access to the CUI enclave. You've got to look for the creative scenarios to the problem with CMMC 171. But yeah, air conditioning and machine shop is a luxury. Our facility for many years never had air conditioning because it was very hard to have enough tonnage of AC to keep up with the equipment. Very expensive. Would I rather spend some five-figure sum on AC or put that towards a new piece of equipment that will make me more money?
Hey everyone, Jacob here. Let me tell you about today's sponsor, Vanta. As the number and severity of third-party breaches continues to rise, companies are increasingly vigilant, not just about how they handle their own data, but how their vendors do as well. For compliance leaders, this means more security reviews are coming across your desk every day, and valuable time is being wasted on manual security reviews. With Vanta questionnaire automation, compliance teams can complete security reviews up to 5 times faster, giving you time back to focus on running your compliance programs. Over 8,000 global companies like ZoomInfo, SmartRecruiters, and Noibu use Vanta to save time on security reviews. Register for their upcoming webinar, Vanta in Action, questionnaire automation at vanta.com/GRC Academy. That's vanta.com/GRC Academy. Thanks and enjoy the rest of the episode. And this is another reason why I think this is so fascinating, because in a typical IT environment, the answers are often very simple. But you just described it. You have to get very creative in this type of environment. So I really think it's fascinating. Talk to us about specific challenges in a manufacturing environment specific to 800-171 and CMMC.
First one was going to be employee buy-in. And this is the same for every business, but so much so with manufacturing, because you've got people so set in their ways on how they do things. They go, why do I have to change? I like my paper prints. I like to be able to do this and that. And you got to be, no, sorry, we can't do that anymore. We've got to change how we operate to keep the data protected. And there are ways that manufacturers can do that. And a lot of it comes into explaining what the problem is. And most of these guys are very much red-blooded patriots. You start getting into, hey, our data is being stolen. Our weapon systems are being duplicated in China. A lot of these guys will buy it. The biggest thing is they're so set in, I want to have my paper print here. Okay, you can still have your paper print, but every evening you need to go lock it up because it needs to be controlled. And getting that habit formed, because there's a lot of habits that are going to have to be broken. And then the biggest issue that I see out there is budget. Most manufacturers give their IT team, if that exists, a shoestring and some duct tape and say, make it work. They've got to realize that, hey, I'm probably going to have to be spending X dollars per employee head from now on to maintain my compliance, whether that is through upgrading their Microsoft licensing, working with their MSP to provide better service than what they originally were buying with their MSP. There's all sorts of things there. And the DoD has been clear that they expect prices to raise. It's just nobody wants to be the first one to raise their prices.
For these manufacturing shops, I imagine most of them are actually just setting up CUI enclaves. They're probably not doing it across their entire network, or their network's probably very small too. So how does that balancing act there go?
And that's a very good point. Obviously, from a cost perspective, if you could enclave just a portion of your facility and staff, that would be preferable. The problem goes into, where does your CUI need to flow? Every machinist, even though they get a piece of specialized program that is not delivered by the government, that's in-house developed, so it's not CUI, still needs to have that print at the machine, because they have to check to make sure that the part that's coming off the equipment meets the print. Okay, now that means every machinist who machines a DoD part now needs to be in your CUI enclave. And then you start going through that operation, and you're like, okay, that leaves out three people from my entire 50-man order who will not have to touch CUI. At that point, it's easier to say, no, we're going to put the whole shop in the enclave, and we're going to control the entire environment, unless you are very niche. Most machine shops, they're hopping from job to job, and there's no real way to say, okay, this half of the building is CUI enclave. They have to pretty much make the whole facility. It is a massive investment, but it's one that needed to be done 30 years ago. This is one thing that, as I work with more and more businesses and talk with others in the CMMC space, I am more concerned every day that 171 still is not enough. Even with some of the enhanced controls in 172, when dimensions are so tight for things like the F-35, F-22, other advanced weapon systems out there, if it's some critical dimensions get changed, and you are eventually able in your logs to determine what happened, but it was a zero day, so no red flags came up and your parts already shipped off. Now you've got a huge problem, and integrity of your prints and your models is, to me, a big thing I'm seeing as a problem. And convincing a business owner to spend even more money, go beyond what is required under 171, is not going to happen.
Yeah, that's very true. And I can just imagine if there was an equipment failure down the line, trying to figure out what component failed and then tracing it back to the shop who provided, I don't know if that's possible, but you're exactly right. That is very critical. What can help them going forward? What do you think maybe that they're already doing that they could apply here? And whether it's even if it's a mindset kind of thing, well, you know?
Well, a mindset is perfectly great thing to talk about. Many of these machine shops already either ISO 9001 or AS9100 quality management certified. And there are a lot of parallels into what is going into CMMC today. So that's, if I'm talking to a key person at a business, I'm like, okay, let's think about your quality management system today and how you handle your documents, your personnel, and how you handle the flow of parts through your facility. This is no different. It's just, we take out keeping documents retention and everything from a quality standpoint to a, hey, you have this entire standard for where the CUI flows, where the data goes. You just start thinking of those parallels. They're much quicker to understand, because even today, there are manufacturing businesses who are like, what's CMMC? And that's the first thing I go to is, are you AS9100 certified? Yes. Okay. It's like a quality management system.
Are there other resources out there that folks can lean on? Because I feel like the government, they are doing some things. What are some of the resources available that they could take advantage of?
The Apex accelerators are one key piece in that puzzle. They are there to provide support. They are there to provide tools. Michigan has a great Apex accelerator. The Schoolcraft College there, they're top notch and definitely are advocating for their business owners to provide not only training and funding for these programs so that they can get these systems implemented. We can all say, hey, you were supposed to have been doing this back since 2017, but nobody understood it because they don't understand what goes into 171 as a NIST standard. I can tell you when it first came out and I was handed it, I'm like, oh, we do that. I was completely wrong.
Reminds me of when I was starting out as well.
Yeah. You were asking about resources. There is also Project Spectrum out there. I do want to throw that out there. The best way, in my opinion, is you've got to be willing to cut some checks. Even if you get some free support from the government, you're going to have some investment to make on your side, but it's going to make you a better business because it's going to force you to look at your overall IT infrastructure and you might find some efficiencies that you didn't realize you were missing.
If they're looking for a CMMC consultant, a CMMC assessor, what types of questions should they be asking to get the right fit?
For that, they need to be asking, hey, what's your familiarity with how a machine shop floor works? Are you familiar with how the equipment I utilize functions? Not necessarily the specific piece, but the generic sector that it comes from. If they're looking on the implementation side, are they familiar with looking for creative solutions to a problem? Because no machine shop, no business is exactly the same. So they need to be looking for, like we talked about with physical, putting a chain link fence across your doors so that you can leave your door open for airflow when it's 100 degrees inside the building and negative 10 outside. If they have some experience with those sort of things, that's the type of person who's willing to come in and say, okay, to meet the bare minimum, you need to be doing this. Now, you should probably be doing this,
yes,
but to meet the standard, you need to do this. And then when they're going for their actual C3PO assessment, again, looking for assessors who have experience going out on the floor, working on the implementation side with some of their customers. One of my instructors for CMMC, he had some great examples from a machine shop floor. If I were looking for a C3PO for a machine shop today, I'd be calling him up and saying, hey, Brian, I have this client, let's talk.
Yeah, and I think that point you brought up is so critical, finding someone with that specialized experience with manufacturers. Because I can tell you right now, I'm going to be CCA certified pretty soon here, but I would not be comfortable at all. I don't know that world. The other thing about it is if you get a consultant who's used to traditional IT systems, they could bring in a very expensive solution that they don't need at all. And what you ended up with is expensive system that ends up being gold plated and you didn't need that. Finding somebody with that specific experience, I think, is invaluable for manufacturers.
Yes, absolutely. Also, on the implementation side, somebody who's familiar with ERP, enterprise resource planning, or MRP software, because right now, I view that as the biggest not met for everybody because they're not, most of them are using not FedRAMP and everybody's moved to the cloud.
Manufacturers out there, even if you feel like you have a solid implementation, things are changing still and you got to keep your eyes on it to make sure that once you do your assessment, you're good to go.
I think there needs to be better communication because a lot of these business owners aren't on LinkedIn. They're not keeping up with the news and on all of this. I was in an event less than a month ago, sponsored by Crane Naval Surface Warfare, a big base here in Indiana. And I was talking to several manufacturers who had no idea what I was talking about, didn't know what CMMC was. I'm like, no. Go to Google, DOD, all of this. And they're like, okay, we'll do that. And you could definitely see as soon as I pulled it up on their phone, I went, oh, crud. How do we better communicate this to the DIB? Because so many of these businesses are 3, 4, 5 suppliers down on a contract. A lot of things are, I can do this piece of work, but I can't do this little component. So I'm going to send it to Joe's machine shop because he's got that specialized piece of equipment.
Great points. This has been so good. Love this conversation here. Let me end with a question here. If you were giving advice to a younger person, they are in the manufacturing shop, they've just been given the IT systems to manage, and then they find out, oh boy, CMMC, I got to do this too. What would be your advice to them?
Firstly, don't panic. It seems like an awful lot, and it is. But the first step is to try to just overall draw out your scope. From there, once you get a big picture, you need to talk to the stakeholders and go, hey, is our DoD business worth keeping? Does our sub business, if you're prime, you have any prime contracts, is it worth keeping? If it's not, because it's less than 5% of your business, there's nothing wrong with saying no, thank you, and just walking away. If it is a critical portion of your business or your big customers who are not necessarily giving you DoD work, but they're saying, we still want you to meet this standard, there's plenty of education out there. There are plenty of people out there willing to talk for free. Believe me, I've taken plenty of free phone calls with business owners just because it's a massive undertaking for them and they need to know what is really involved here. And so go get some education if you're that IT person. Not necessarily CCP if you don't have the time, but if you do have the time, I highly recommend at a minimum getting the CCP. Not even passing the test, just get the training. That's going to help you. And then if you are one person with an organization, there's just too much going on, find that MSP who is willing to get level two. If they're willing to do that, you should have tools available to you to get it accomplished. And I'm saying this as talking to somebody who is another manufacturing shop. The son of the business owner is the head of IT. And this is exactly what I talked to him about. It's like, hey, it's fine. Just get some training. You have support. You can do this. It is doable.
Folks, Daniel Stark, Meerkat Cyber, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you so much for having me.